Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Steve Jones Show, best of for this Independence Day holiday. Thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK and on WKOK.com. Steve Jones will join us from the Sunbury Motors Studio in about a half hour or so here on WKOK. In the meantime, we have some of our best interviews of the last month or so for you, including an interview with Bill King on the Lenape Solar Hotline. That happened just a few days ago, as a matter of fact, and became very timely as college football changed the way that they will decide a national champion. Bill King from SiriusXM talked with Steve about that again on the Lenape Solar Hotline.
We bring in Bill King. He's the host of 24/7 College Sports on SiriusXM 91. He's covered college football for many, many years. Bill, great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you guys.
Great to be with you as well. Well, it certainly has been quite a week, and obviously things have been fast-tracked when it comes to college football. In the end, do you like the solution that was approved by the commissioners and then thumbed up by the presidents?
No, I'm in the minority, vast minority, I would think, there, if you will. I've always been a BCS guy. Now, let me give you a few of my reasons. I think it's incredible drama, and I'm in the radio business, and it's made for fantastic radio since 1998. I don't know what we've got. I guess if you want to say we've got two more teams added to the fray, it's more fair. It gets two more teams a shot than what we had. But in the end, guys, this wasn't about being fair. This wasn't about letting the little guy in. This was this buckled because the money is overwhelming. That's where we're at today.
Well, in the end, isn't that usually the story, though? The money is overwhelming and it drives the bus?
Well, it hadn't been today. Not in this sport. Not considering this playoff opportunity has been out there for a long time. Now, elsewhere in life, yeah. Yeah, I think we've all got a price, correct. I know where you're going there. But in this case, guys, you know, most of the guys. Now, obviously, Mike Sly has been pro playoff. John Swofford has been pro playoff for some time here. The Lost Dodds at Texas, Bill Powers, the president who represented them, they've been pro playoff for a long time, but there are a bunch of guys who have reversed course on this one.
And is happened to be one of those guys, Jim Delaney?
Yeah, Jim has. And, Harvey Furman, even with Nebraska, he was one of the representatives there, obviously, for the Big Ten, or the representative, the chancellor of Nebraska. And I thought it was a good question. The questions from the media yesterday were embarrassingly weak when they had that thing on ESPN. But the good one was a guy picked out Harvey Furman, and he said, "Where's Harvey?" He stood up there and he said, "What do you think?" He said, "Well, we got a third choice." Obviously, his first choice was status quo. His second choice would have been the plus one. But he made it very clear, despite this not being the way we would have gone with it, we're not going to stand in the way of it or attempt to. So.
Well, that matches up, though, with the presidential chancellor philosophy in the Big Ten. When the presidents and chancellors in the conference met, they came up with what they thought were their top three choices as to what they thought was one, followed by two and three. And he was just following really the pattern of what they had out of their own meetings. That's the exact same order that the other conferences, the presidents and chancellors had in the Big Ten.
Yeah. It's just that Harvey Furman, as an individual, has made it very clear. Obviously, despite the league and despite Jim Delaney, that as an individual, he was not for this.
No, he was not. At the same time, I know you like the matchup of a BCS championship game. And on talk shows, it's obviously something fun to talk about. But don't the fans enjoy games? Why we have so many playoff tiers now, the fans enjoy games with stakes.
Well, yeah, I mean, doing the show that I do, I don't know that we've got adequate polling, but I would just assume that if we ran a scientific poll And we took the average fan out there of college football. Are you for a playoff? I'd say 80% of them, at least. I could be short. It would say yes. They're for it. There's no question that there's an overwhelming sentiment here for it. And I think it depends on how you spin this thing. Again, I mean, it's, I guess, the setup, because it's going to be a committee, which, by the way, is a train wreck. That's a train wreck in and of itself. But the setup in and of itself, meaning the end game, which is four teams instead of two, is really not all that much different. But we're going to call it a playoff. Technically, it will be, because you're going to seed them 1 through 4. And there will be a standalone, unrelated to any bowl game, championship. Kind of the college football's Super Bowl, if you will. And I guess they're going to call it Championship Monday or whatever they're calling it. But so I guess technically it's different. But I've seen a lot of folks who were skeptics here. And probably these are the people who would like to see more eight teams in this thing than four. But it's not enough change to some people in this deal.
You said during the course of that answer with Bill King, by the way, Sirius XM Channel 91, it's the 24/7 Sports Radios on Campus is the show with Bill King. And, Bill, you said during that a selection committee is a train wreck. Why is it a train wreck, and what should be used?
Well, I think you need some sort of computer. Now, not one where you have no transparency. That's the big critique right now, is nobody knows how the hell these things work and who's plugging in a formula and all that kind of stuff. Well, we know who's plugging in the formula, but exactly how they work, that's a problem for many. But first and foremost, if the thinking is we're going to get a committee of ex-coaches and they're somehow more objective than the average dude out there, that's preposterous. These ex-coaches, and God love them, I covered them all and love watching them, but they've got as many biases and regional, opinion as anybody on this planet. I think, now again, hey, guys, that's going to be fantastic radio. Because let me put in perspective the drama we're talking about.
Sure.
Selection Sunday in basketball, if we really look at it, is not dramatic. I mean, we've got Dick Vitale and Jay Billis on camera barking about some team that was really about the 69th best team, right?
Right.
And that's real compelling to everybody, right? No. We watch it, but it's not. Now we've got four teams. We got a selection committee that's going to do this, apparently. And we're going to have three teams, let's just say randomly one year, that are sitting there at 11-1, 12-1, not in the game. Now that's drama. I mean, which, again, I think imperfection is good, and another reason why I like the BCS. I always call it perfectly imperfect. It's the most perfectly imperfect thing we've got. That's why it's so ideal. There's drama. There's interest. It draws us in. With this, if indeed this is so fair, it's so much more clear-cut and so much cleaner, wait until we get there and you've got 11-1 teams sitting there not in this thing.
Well,
and how would you like, if they call me, I'd do it, but how'd you like to be a committee member? And I mean, you talk about scrutiny now, big time.
No question. In fact, when I've looked at the NCAA men's basketball tournament, the reality is it's not 68, it's the 37. And the 37, 30 of the 37 are easy calls.
Right.
I mean,
right.
30 out of the 37 are easy calls. It's the last seven. And probably for the committee, there's actually probably much more work in the seeding part of it than it is in the selection part of it, because those last seven are hard. But then you seed all of them. And when I've looked at the NCAA, that's what I've always thought. 30 out of the 37 at-larges were actually relatively easy calls.
Yeah. I mean, this one's going to be fun. And then you've got the Big 12, which, I mean, if I'm them, I'm not expanding. Number one, I don't know who I'd go. Now, if Notre Dame wants to come, I would do it. And that,
sure,
someday that may be possible, because we know that the Lost Stars and Jack Swarbrick are very close. But at the end of the day, they're not even playing a league championship game. So we're going to have people squawking about uniform. But even, again, all healthy. It's just my reply is this isn't as clean and perfect as everybody that just has to have a playoff thinks it is.
One of the faults with the BCS is that if you play a game in late November, this is before the Big Ten had its championship game. You recall Ohio State won 51 days before they played another game.
Yeah.
By having the conference championship game, that now gets moved to the first weekend of December, and now you're probably only going to have a 3.5 to 4 week gap before a semifinal game. Is it possible that we will have a better, far more competitive in-sync championship game because the two teams playing in it will have played the week before?
Very good point. And I got to admit now, sitting there 6 weeks, I mean, you got a chance to be arrested and reinstated by then. You know, at that point. Hey, down in the South, we know what that's like. But, yeah, I always found that irritating. What was also irritating is this last year, I'm at a grocery store January 1st, and I'm thinking, there's no college football today. Now, that's blasphemy, is just what that is. I never liked that when we lost January 1 as a vital, you know, bowl day.
Agreed. But, I agree with that completely, as a matter of fact, January 1st. And I guess the way this works is that one of the games will be December 31st, and the other game will be January 1st.
Yeah, and it's that next Monday, provided you've got a week length. So it starts on 12 and works all the way back to about 8 or something like that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there's lots of imperfections there to talk about when it comes to the BCS. I'll say this, though. As far as I know, watching every one of those games, covering every one of those games, I don't remember walking out of any national championship, BCS 1 versus 2, and thinking, you know what, if they'd have, you know, had only 3 weeks to prepare, I think something different would have happened. Now, you know, how do we know it wouldn't have? I guess we'll never know the truth on that. But it never occurred to me that, for example, Team A would have really beat Team B if now, do you get rusty and everything else and you know, Luke, particularly offensively? I've always debated every one of these games. I remember just trying to stand on the highest mountain back in 08 down in Miami. And Oklahoma, if you'll recall, guy, offensively that year, they were revved up as well as any offense I can remember in recent memory. I mean, they were scoring crazy pinball numbers. And they're playing a Florida team that, frankly, a lot of people thought was the underdog in that game. And so I remember, And I remember sitting there going, do not take the football. After being off this long offensively, oh, no, offense is continuity. Defense, you can just go sit them to a certain extent. And I remember, obviously, it was a three and out early there, and I'm not sure that had anything to do with the end of the game. But that much time off, guys, kills offenses in particular. And that's always bothered me.
Yeah. You have said in your time, and Penn State fans will obviously argue with you about this because they'll tell you that here that the 94 offense is the greatest offense they've seen here. You say it's the 83 Nebraska offense that actually lost its title game when Tom Osborne had the guts, by the way, to go for two points.
Yep.
Why 83 Nebraska? I mean, I know the names off the top of my head because they played Penn State that year, but, you know, why do you think?
Boy, I just thought with the ability of a quarterback that was a multi, you know, a dual threat quarterback like that, as athletic as that team was offensively. And I remember watching, I've got to say, guys, of you know, major bowl games, and I was just trying to get my way out of college at that time in 84. But as far as major bowl games, that's the most shocked I've been as far as an upset, probably. I just put my mouth open, and Miami's up big with Bernie Kosar and all that. I just remember thinking, this can't be real. But, just offensively, not only with the quarterback, but you're talking wide receivers, you're talking running backs, you're talking a massive offensive line, and you're right, going for two. Where back then, if he kicks the field goal and ties it, they win the national championship. Now, let's go to Penn State. 1993, I think it was. I've been to so many Fiesta Bowls. They run together.
Yeah.
But was it? But I'm talking about the Tennessee game.
Oh, that's the Citrus Bowl. Yes, in 1993. That set up the 94 year.
Yeah. Correct. Because a couple of years prior, it was the Fiesta Bowl, right?
Right. So. Exactly.
But anyway, because I remember the opening kickoff, but Dale Carter did not jump on the ball, and Penn State got you know, one play, 7-0.
Right.
But I remember that game, and Heath Shuler was turning pro. That was a Tennessee team that was real hot. And after after Tennessee got a 10-0 lead, that same Penn State team that, you know, developed into the team you're talking about just crunched the Bulls. I mean, physically mashed them. So I've got immense respect for that group because I watched kind of the makings of what that was going to be. So, yeah, no, that's a compelling argument. And I also think that 92 Bama defense.
I was about to talk to you about Gene Stallings' 92 Bama defense. What made that group special? Because I think they did some things that turned some heads when they beat Miami for the title.
Well, if you think about it, they had, and again, it's hard to bring up the name Jerry Sandusky, but before this huge, you know, deal and everything, that was a name that we would talk about defensive coordinators. And Charlie McBride at Nebraska, I covered his last Fiesta Bowl at Nebraska, by the way, same story, played Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That had been 99.
Right.
But they had a defensive coordinator, Brother Oliver, Bill Oliver, who's well-known in the South, one of the really big names as far as defensive coordinators, a Bama guy. And they had fantastic talent. I'll give you an example. Antonio Langham was at cornerback. Yeah. Sam Shade was back there at safety. They had Derek Oden and Antonio London at linebacker. Their two defensive ends, Curry and Copeland, went very high in the draft. So it was a lot of personnel there, but they were just wicked. I mean, just physical, fast. And you also remember that team had a quarterback, Jay Barker, who was a good college quarterback, but was not a prospect. And all they did was run the ball. It's not like they had a real fancy offense. So I thought almost single-handedly that defense won a national championship for them that year.
Was that was the one where Teague literally just took the ball right out of Thomas's.
George Teague was in that. I left him out. He was in that second.
George Teague,
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's one of those plays you don't see a lot.
No, I think you see one of those every 10 years.
Correct.
Make a play like that, especially when the guy catching it thinks he's the greatest thing on the planet and all of a sudden realizes that he's running without something. Bill, it was an absolute pleasure. We hope to get you back on the show again soon. Bill, by the way, it's 24/7 Sports Radio's On Campus with Bill King, SiriusXM Channel 91. Bill, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your thoughts and for being with us today.
Hey, guys, another time I'll tell you the story about how East Tennesseans went nuts when Penn State came down and got Leroy Thompson. We'll do that one day.
I remember that well, by the way.
Yeah, we'll save that one for another time.
Bill King, thanks so much. Bill, 24/7 Sports on XM Sirius 91. We appreciate that very much. We'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Well, happy 4th of July to each and every one of you. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. We've already heard from Bill O'Brien and Matt McGloin, and also our thanks to Bill King for his perspective. Even though I may not agree with his perspective on this playoff, he is pro-BCS and I am anti-BCS. Next half hour, we'll have Guy Gadowski on the show. We just threw some burgers and dogs on the grill here, preparing for the big 4th Fest here in State College tonight, where they're expecting nearly 100,000 people on hand for a 45-minute rocket show. We're looking forward to that this evening. I know, Kevin, you have some big plans, obviously. Knowing you, I'm sure that you're going to be going over somebody's house uninvited and just hoping that they'll have some food there for you.
Well, I was actually hoping. By the way, I'm glad you took some time out from grilling. I was going to actually head your way to see if there was any food left.
No, we're done. We're finished.
Yeah,
thanks.
That figures.
All done. In fact, I'll be leaving the house shortly here. The show's over at 5. I should be out of here by probably about 5:01. So if you happen to swing by and we're not here, that'd be the reason why. I'm actually on TV tonight, broadcasting the fireworks locally on television here on WHVL-TV.
How in the world do you broadcast fireworks? I mean, what, do you have to do play-by-play? Wow, that was a beautiful red one.
No, I don't do that. No, no. It's a 45-minute pre-show in which we talk to the organizers, those who set the fireworks, the work that goes into it with the computer people, some of the events that are going on around it. We have two prepackaged features on it on how it all works. We'll be doing that. So it's 45 minutes of a series of interviews, and I'll do it from the southeast corner of Beaver Stadium. There's a little deck that is outside the luxury suites. We'll be overlooking the fireworks and the entire parking lot from there, and that's where I'll be doing that from, and I'll be on tonight at 8:30 to do that. And then I have to do 2 minutes afterward where I tell everybody it was fantastic.
It was a great one. It was a great event.
Wasn't that special? Yeah, that was super, yeah.
They're just going to dub in what you did 2 years ago.
See you next year. Should be great. Yeah. So we're going to do a 45-minute pre for what should be a 35- or 40-minute fireworks show and then 2 minutes afterwards. So that's what I'm doing tonight. So as soon as I'm done here, I mean, if you're just about ready to get in your car and drive over, we're going to be dispersing pretty soon.
I missed my chance. I was going to make you my special. I was going to make you a special barbecue chicken, too. I was going to show you how I do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Right before I go on television. Yeah, great move. Is that your way of somehow getting and weaseling into the spot? All right.
Let's just say.
News coming up bottom of the hour as we continue and roll on the Wednesday edition here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show, Independence Day edition. Kevin Herr. Steve Jones has decided to stick around in the Sunbury Motors Studio for just a few more minutes before he goes and lights up all the fireworks.
Incredible to be the one that they're asked to start the fireworks, and I realized they didn't ask me to. It just worked out that way. So
they heard you were a pyromaniac. That's why
they're going to shoot. They're going to shoot. I want to say 10,000 to 20,000 shells tonight.
Wow!
Can you believe that? Here at Fourth Fest, this is the 20th year they've had some form of Fourth Fest here. They used to have the Sunrise Kiwanis Club here. And the Sunrise Kiwanis used to spend $8,000 and put on a fireworks show in which they shot those things up one at a time. Right? And, people would go up and go, hey, boom, boom. And then, of course, there'd be a finale. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, great. Then a guy named Dan Barker, who owned a radio station in town, took over the fireworks. Basically, he bought them. And he took this $8,000 fireworks show, and he put $100,000 into it. $100,000. And he choreographed it all the music. I mean, really, and his firing system, he came up with this himself.
Yeah, this is amazing.
He came up with this himself, a computer firing system that synchronizes it to the music. His computer firing system, and he goes all over the world with this, is used at Euro Disney, Disney World, Disneyland, in Australia. You've seen some of the New Year's Eve Las Vegas where they're taking down buildings.
Sure.
And done it with fireworks, yep, and so forth. You know, and that's all planned out. That's him. He does all of this. Well, finally, he got out of it in 2001, I want to say, right around there. And this group called Fourth Fest took over. And the first year they didn't use his firing system, the fireworks didn't go off. They started and then stopped.
Oh, I remember that.
Well, finally, I remember going to a friend's house watching this. I'm looking at this thing. Well, this is an unqualified disaster. And finally, they basically said, okay, that's it. Well, now they have all these unexploded shells. So I go home finally, and I get here, and I go to bed about midnight because I had to be up at 4:30. I had to go into work the next morning.
And all of a sudden, around midnight, boom, 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 they start firing all the shells off because I guess they had to legally to get rid of them.
Yeah,
because
you can't take them back. Once they're in the canister, they've got to be fired.
They have to be fired. So, I mean, I'm laying in bed thinking I'm in Baghdad. It's unbelievable. Right? And now, but since then, they have fired up one special show after another. I'll say this for Dan Parker. He had the ability to put on 1 year, and we had a drought around here during this year. Mm-hmm. This particular year, he fired off the fireworks off Mount Nittany.
Wow.
He got the permission to do it. It was done to the theme, because I was the narrator of it, to right. the theme of Princess Nittany, and it was perfect. So that's what they have here, and we'll talk about that and much more tonight on the TV side of this thing. Burgers and dogs are all gone. Chips are gone. Potato salad, almost all gone.
Speaking of fireworks, real quick, Steve, Saturday the 14th, Sunbury Celebration fireworks. Rain date set for the 15th. Soundtrack on one of our sister stations, 94KX, right around 9:30.
Guy Godowski coming up next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Homeowners and business owners, listen up. What if you could make an investment in something that will never lose its incredible value? Invest in the most abundant commodity there is, the sunshine. Lenape Solar can show you how an investment in a photovoltaic or solar thermal energy system can pay you back through saving money and energy with a great rate of return. In fact, an investment in solar energy pays it forward to your great-grandchildren and to the planet's future. Lenape Solar is your trusted local source for solar energy and energy efficiency solutions. Experts in renewable energy legislation and incentives with professional and certified installers. Take the path towards energy independence by investing in solar energy with Lenape Solar. This is Tanya Diddy, and I invite you to schedule your free energy consultation today by calling 570-286-1496, visiting Lenape Solar at 140 South 2nd Street in Sunbury, or find us online at lenapesolar.com.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show, Best of Steve Jones Show. As we talked about moments ago, Steve had a chance to catch up with the Penn State hockey head coach, Guy Godowski. Lots of excitement about hockey. It'll be their first varsity hockey game since 1947. It'll take place October 12th. American International is who they're going to play, and they're going to play them again in Wilkes-Barre a few nights later. But Steve had a chance to talk a little bit more about the Penn State schedule and about the first year of Penn State varsity hockey with head coach Guy Godowski on the Lenape Solar Hotline earlier in the month of June.
Guy, welcome to the show. And I want to get to the difficulty in putting together a schedule. You're putting together essentially what is an independent schedule in season one. So you don't have the luxury of having a series of conference games set up. You'll have 20 conference games that will be automatically set for you in the 2013-2014 season. But you don't have that luxury this time around. You have Union, who was in the Frozen Four. You have Michigan State. You have Wisconsin. Those are all on the road. How difficult was it to set up an independent schedule, considering that other schools have conference schedules that they have to deal with as well?
Absolutely. Because of those two things, you're right. It's not an easy thing, but I'm very happy with how it came out. And actually, we played... I'm sure you've noticed, Donna, there's three weekends away that are going to be very, very difficult. One's Union, two at Union, who just went to the Frozen Four, two at Michigan State, and two at Wisconsin. And, in fact, we were supposed to play those two Big Ten opponents earlier in the year, but Bill Downey was able to finagle things a little bit and give us a chance to play them later in the year, which is very difficult for what you said earlier, that they're in the midst of their conference schedule, and it was very difficult. So in that sense, very, very happy how things turned out.
And no question about that. That's the thing that jumped out to me right away was to see Union on there. It didn't surprise me to see some Big Ten on there. But when I saw Union on there, and I just watched them in Tampa on TV in the Frozen Four, that was a pretty good get, especially around Thanksgiving weekend.
It is. It's going to be, I think, a real barometer, I guess, for us. We do play some Division I schools, obviously, before that. We play Air Force is going to be very good games. We'll play Army and RIT. American International to start with, but certainly to play a team like Union, and actually they're a pretty young team. They didn't lose a lot. They did lose one of their top scorers who signed in the NHL, but they're still going to be 90% of the same team that you saw in Tampa. So I think it's going to be a great barometer for where we are at the time. And, being in the ECAC in the past 7 years, I know that's a very, very difficult building to play in. So it's going to be a great test.
And then, of course, you already alluded to the four Big Ten matchups, two at Michigan State, two at Wisconsin. One's at the end of January. One's at the end of February. Strategically, do you like the placement of it? Because it would give you, quote, some time to get your team together in balance, building as the season goes along?
Very much so. And like I said, I think initially we were supposed to play them earlier, I believe in November, and we were able to get that changed. What I think it's a big difference. Obviously, everybody is a Division I freshman next year. Everybody. Well, we do have a couple transfers that played a little bit before, but basically everybody else. We are all Division I freshmen, all rookies. So to give us a few more months to prepare and do things, I think, is going to be huge. I think you could go in and play a great opponent like Michigan State early and not learn a ton because you're still trying to develop your own game. This gives us an opportunity to work on ourselves, get an idea of what we're all about, and then take it and to see how it equates against a Big Ten opponent. So I'm very thrilled with that. That's a lot better option as far as I'm concerned.
And, Guy, the other part is there may be another Big Ten team you could play in there because of the tournament at Consol Energy that includes
right.
a very good Miami of Ohio program and what Dick Girardi and I always refer to as Bobby Moe, Robert Morris.
That's right.
But that's a great tournament, though.
It is a good tournament. I think as things are coming out, I don't know if it's 100% yet, but it looks like we will play your Bobby Moe on Friday. And then on Saturday, either play Ohio State or Miami, Ohio. Either one of those will be excellent tests. And that's going to come at the end of December. So that will be great for us as well.
Also, at the same time, there's some fill part in there with three ACHA opponents. Arizona State, which has always been a really good ACHA program. Oklahoma, which has come on as an ACHA program. And maybe as bitter a rival as Penn State has had in its ACHA days in Ohio University.
Yeah, and I think it's great. We had to fill our schedule, and really no one knew how recruiting was going to go and how things were going to shape up. So I think it was important that we get a mix of programs, and we don't know where we stand yet. It might be you certainly want to see your team play some offense, and who knows where we're going to be against some of the other Division I programs. Maybe we're going to be on our heels the entire time, and this will give us a chance to explore offense a little bit too, or who knows? You never know, but I like the mix of it. Obviously, the fact that we have some traditional rivals with the ACHA program, I think, is great. I know that those coaches reached out to us, and we're very grateful for the opportunity to play. So I think it's great for everybody, and it's nice to have. I think some of the fans here that remember the days of Ohio University coming to town, I think are going to enjoy that a lot.
Also, there's a little bit of a road show here involved. I mentioned already Consol Energy with the tournament, but you're also going to play Vermont at Wells Fargo. You also have the second AIC game at the Mohegan Sun Arena up in Wilkes-Barre.
Yep.
And, of course, you mentioned RIT. That will be at Rochester, which, of course, Terry Pegula owns the Americans. So just to get the program around the state in strategic areas, give us an idea how much that helps.
It's something that the fans really wanted. When I had a chance to go recruiting and even on the caravan, the coach's caravan, there was questions about will we be able to see the team in their city. So we are playing in different cities around the state and allowing Penn State fans to come out and see the team there. So I think it's creating a lot of excitement in that sense. They're very happy about it. I think it's good to take our show on the road, especially before Pegula's open. Obviously, when the beautiful building is here, we're going to want to stay at home as much as possible. So the timing is certainly right, and I know a lot of fans are very grateful for it.
After you go up to Storrs to play UConn at the start in January, you come back and you play the U.S. National Under-18 team. How did that come about?
Yeah, typically they will play a number of Division I college opponents, and the games, actually one of them will be an exempt game, and it's great for those players to sort of take a look around and see the different teams. A lot of them are the highest you know, they're very high-profile players that are playing for the national program. The games, they take them very seriously. It's the top games they play. They will play a junior schedule as well. But to give them a chance to play college opponents is something they really look forward to because they're showcasing themselves to those colleges. A lot of the times these players are already committed to colleges, but they're always good games. It gives us a chance as well to see some of the top players in the country. So it's a win-win situation.
Also, as you have gone around, and we've talked about this before, there's always excitement because, you know, I mean, people are excited about getting Division I ice hockey back going again for the first time since 1947 here. At the same time, I've also mentioned to you that, you know, affectionately, you're an expansion team.
Right.
For you now, how do you, on the recruiting trail, give us a sense of the reception of Penn State being Division I varsity is getting, at least in terms of pure reception and doors opening?
You know what? Phenomenal. In any college areas that we go, Penn State is the number one story. Penn State coming into college hockey is huge, and it's huge for, obviously, the formation of the Big Ten Hockey Conference, which never has happened before. Big Ten hockey teams have dominated their respective conferences and dominated the national scene. They have the most NHL alumni, the most national championships, the best buildings, the most excitement. I mean, these programs have been just destroying the national scene for a long time. So to put them all in one Big Ten conference is really exciting. It gets a lot of exposure. The Big Ten Network was obviously a huge driving force behind this. They want it on TV. It's now going to be across North America. So it's going to be great for college hockey. So the reception that we're getting going anywhere in the nation where college hockey already has a presence has been phenomenal. Going up to Canada, they know all about Penn State coming into Division I hockey. So I tell you, everywhere that I go, as well as the other coaches recruiting, you know, the people want to talk about Penn State. It's something great for college hockey and great for hockey. Like you said, it's an expansion franchise. I just wish we had that first overall pick. I wish it worked like that. But doesn't work quite like that.
That'd be nice. Yeah, the first overall pick, and then, of course, you'd have the seventh overall pick because there are six schools in the Big Ten and so forth. That'd be nice. I want to explore the Big Ten Network part. College hockey is on in certain pockets. NESN has a package in New England. Fox Sports Midwest has a package, obviously. And CBS Sports Network has a package. I see some Notre Dame, Miami of Ohio games on there once in a while. But to have the Big Ten Network to be on in 75 million homes with a regular televised package, what kind of impact do you think that can have on the game, not just Penn State and the other Big Ten schools, but the game?
That's right. Exactly. So right now, college hockey is in a bit of a turf war with major junior hockey. Major junior hockey is primarily in Canada where the players, once you play major junior, are actually deemed ineligible to play college because they're basically pros. They get paid, and it's how it works. And it's a very successful, major junior hockey is very successful. They get a lot of NHL guys. Graduates, they draw very well in their locations. So the war has basically been major junior hockey can get these guys early because the NCAA rules permit us from contacting them. With the Big Ten Network being in so many households and all across North America, it gives college hockey a platform to educate these families about college hockey, not just major junior. It might not be so important in Minnesota or Massachusetts or Michigan, but in places like Saskatchewan and Alberta and Manitoba, it is very important. So the Big Ten Network coming on board because of the Big Ten Hockey Conference is, as you said, it's going to be huge for hockey and huge for college hockey, not just Penn State, not just this area or the Big Ten schools. It's going to be great for all of college hockey.
In fact, I've watched some of the Memorial Cup on the NHL Network the last week or so. That's the junior championship right there. And that's exactly, you know, but what will happen is the NHL television network doesn't have the same reach as the Big Ten Network does, and at least in this on this side of the border. That's big for what you want to do.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're getting more and more colleges doing better and better in the NHL. You look at Minnesota, one of our Big Ten counterparts. I mean, they had I think, 18 NHL draft choices on their team. So this is a different deal. The quality of these programs are huge, and I think, but across the border especially, people don't understand how good college hockey is and how much fun college hockey is, and certainly it's going to be, in terms of environment, Pagoula Ice Arena is going to rock it. I mean, there's not going to be a better place, in my mind, with knowing the student body here at Penn State. It's going to be phenomenal. So for the Big Ten Network to show that in so many homes and across the border, it's going to be an education, I think, for a lot of people.
When you have crossed the border and your staff has crossed the border to talk to youngsters, have they, north of the border, grasped Penn State and what Penn State's trying to do and had a grasp on what the Big Ten is trying to do in college hockey in general? Is there a better sense compared to where it may have been even a year ago?
I think people are aware of it, and certainly Penn State brand really brings a lot of that. I think Mr. Pagoula brings some of that. I think that, you know, people know that he's involved in the Buffalo Sabres. They like that. I think they understand what the Big Ten brand, the Penn State brand, but I think until they actually see a game on TV that they're really going to grasp what this is all about. So there's certainly more and more awareness across the border. There's excitement across the border. There's a desire to be a part of it. But I really feel once the Big Ten, once the Big Ten conference starts and you're able to see games on a weekly basis in such great buildings, like Yost is just a tremendous place to see a game and the environment. Obviously, Pagoula Ice Arena, I really think it's just going to take off.
Biggie Munn.
That's right.
Biggie Munn Arena, yeah. Right up there. You decided when you came in here a year ago that you would coach the ACHA team this past season. 11 of those players are making the transition over with you. The fact that you did that, stayed in the coaching area of it, and coached these players, just in the pure feel of what you have in those players moving forward, give us an idea of the advantage of what this past season gave to you.
Well, I knew that we would be moving forward playing Division I with a large number of those players. So I think, as you said, to get a feel of those players was very important. Besides that, boy, I really enjoyed coaching them. They're really, really good people, and I'm excited for them to get the chance to come to play, you know, to play club hockey, and then to get the opportunity to play Division I hockey, to go to Wisconsin, to go to Michigan State. I mean, what an opportunity! I'm really happy for them, and I think, you know, it was the right thing to do. I love coaching. I've grown to love the student body here, and I know that I couldn't sit back and watch it, but it was really nice to get to know the players. I think we have a better feel, obviously, for what we have going into it. It was the right thing to do, and most importantly, I was very, very impressed with the quality of the guys. I think it's something about Penn State. I think, you know, I think it weeds out a little bit guys that aren't quality. You know, Penn State people are quality people, and I really enjoyed getting to know them.
Well, and certainly, well, you're a part of it now, believe me. I said to Bill O'Brien when we were flying back from Scranton, I looked over at him. I said, I can't wait to get to September 1st. And he looked at me. He says, no kidding. How anxious are you to get to October 12th?
Oh, man. You know, we've been thinking that way for a while. It's so much fun right now, and not only in terms of the player personnel, but we're hiring equipment managers, we're hiring athletic trainers, we're hiring strength coaches, the whole thing, just to bring it together and to see how we are. We're, you know, you can guess. Our coaching staff, they're like, man, I think this guy is going to do that, and this recruit's going to do that, and this player who we've had here, he's going to do this, and you don't really know until you get it. This is new for everybody. This is brand new. This isn't something that's ever going to happen again. So we just want to get it going. We want to see what we have. We want to move forward. I tell you what, I just can't wait to get closer to that Big Ten Hockey Conference. That's going to be something special.
You and me both. I cannot wait to see it. Guy, I want to thank you for the time you gave us today. I know you carved out a slice of your schedule to do so. I always appreciate it and enjoy talking with you very, very much.
Steve, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Guy Gadowski on the Lenape Solar Hotline. Steve Jones will be back with us tomorrow as he is back in the Sunbury Motors studio, sponsored by Sunbury Motors, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and 4th Street in Sunbury. You'll be able to check in with him tomorrow on the Lenape Solar Hotline at 800-795-9565. You can also send an email later on today and tonight, or tomorrow morning for that matter, stevejones@wkok.com. Again, Steve back with us tomorrow in person once again for a full 2 hours of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Enjoy the rest of the holiday and stay safe.